Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Well, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I'm Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
Hey, I'm Tom Regan.
And I'm Darren Larson.
And we actually have someone joining us from the faraway magical land of Portland, Oregon. Who are you?
My name is Nathan Riley. It's great to be here with you guys.
Yeah, Nathan is a church planter at Red Sea Church, which is one of the churches that we partner with here in the Pacific Northwest. And the reason he's talking to us is we're actually kicking off a new series. Darren, you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, this series is entitled Lampstands. And the reason why is because there's a picture in Revelation. It seems like every podcast we
Revelation.
Have like comes from Revelation. Our last one was called Word of Their Testimony from Revelation 12. This one's from Revelation 1 and 2, where the Bible describes Jesus walking amongst the lampstands, these seven churches that kind of represent, most theologians believe it kind of represents it could be local churches there, but also it kind of represents the church at large in the ancient Greco-Roman world. And so what's cool is we are using this series to talk to several churches and pastors as we talk about what the Lord is doing in our region and in church planters and church planting and just churches in general. So, yeah, I mean, you get this Revelation 1:12. I turned to see the voice of the one who spoke to me when I turned and saw seven golden lampstands. And among the lampstands was one like a son of man, dressed in a robe and with a golden sash wrapped around his chest. And it goes on to describe Christ, the Ancient of Days from Daniel 7. So it's kind of cool. It's this this kind of cool series that we get to start. So I hope we get, I think we've got five or six people on the docket right now. And we get to start with Nathan because he's, well, one of my favorite church planters of all time because he is my brother-in-law.
Yeah. There's also some family obligation there, so it could be awkward if he told you no.
That's true. That's true. So Nathan, yeah, tell us a little bit about who you are and kind of your story and the connection to Imprint Church and all that kind of stuff. Love to hear what you've been up to.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, Darren, the connection is, it's familial. Darren is married to my older sister, Kelly. I don't know, you started hanging out when I was maybe 11 or 12, I think. So
I think you were 12, maybe. 11 or 12, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Something like that. So my story, I grew up in a small town called Albany, Oregon. It's about an hour and a half south of Portland in the kind of the central Willamette Valley. And ministry and church planting was something that was not even ever remotely on my radar. I was a pretty good student in school, and so wound up with a full ride scholarship to Oregon State University's College of Engineering. And got there and kind of got into the middle of the program. And I don't know how to describe it other than God grabbed my heart and kind of made it pretty clear that the plans that I had laid for myself were not the plans that he had for me. And so long story short, I wound up leaving Oregon State and moved overseas and spent the next 3.5 years as an overseas missionary with my wife. So we were... stationed in Germany, down in southern Germany, Bavaria. But really, that was kind of home base. From there, we traveled all over the world. We spent time in West Africa and Southeast Asia, a lot of time in former Soviet Eastern Europe. And we would kind of compile teams of missionaries and then take them and lead them on these short-term missions trips anywhere from a few weeks to a few months long at a time. And so that was with the organization Youth with a Mission, and we loved it. We had a good time. But in my time overseas, serving primarily in what we would consider a parachurch ministry, overseas, focusing really on the work of making converts, and doing so pretty successfully, God really began to grow my heart for the work and ministry of the local church. And that was both through kind of personal experience, but also through my reading of Scripture. It became apparent to me that God's kind of plan A for carrying out the mission of his kingdom work in the world is through the local church, where we're making long-term relationships and ultimately making disciples. And so about that time, I heard really for the first time in my life of kind of the modern church planting movement. I didn't even know that was a thing people were doing anymore. You know, you read the stories
Nathan,
of Paul.
Nathan, what year was that?
This would have been like 2006, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Right
nice.
Around there. And so, Yeah. Long story short, my wife and I felt called to be long-term missionaries and get involved with the local church. And so we had a decision to make, and it was either we commit now to stay in Germany for the rest of our lives, get our permanent residency there, and really incarnate in the culture and start doing church planting, or we had the option to move back to the Pacific Northwest, where we both grew up. My wife was from the Portland area. And we viewed that as an opportunity to maybe be a little more immediately effective. So in 2007, we moved back to the States with this kind of nebulous goal to someday plant a church. The issue was I had no idea how to do that, what to do, what it looked like. I didn't know the first thing about being a pastor. Other than that, my big sister was married to one. And so we moved.
And you were part of my youth group for a time, too. Both of you guys were.
That is very true. Yeah. Back when you were kind of helping to plant a church down in Lake Oswego.
That's right.
So,
yep. I thought you were going to say it was Darren's inspiration as a pastor.
Of course
really
it was.
Led
it was
you
my
to
inspiration.
Want to be a pastor.
You know,
he was just the only one.
You
around.
Know, there were some emails back and forth with Darren in that time, that 2006, 2007, in which he was very kindly hinting at me thinking about local church ministry. And it was really helpful. He sent me a couple of different books written by some church planters at the time that were really inspiring. And it kind of caught my heart on fire for that work. So,
nice.
So we moved back. We actually moved back to Corvallis, which is where Oregon State University is at, and moved back. And our first Sunday back got plugged into a small little church. They were a church plant as well. I think maybe only about 6 months in to church planting at that point. And I met with the pastor the first week and said, "Hey, I'm fresh off the mission field. I think God wants me to be a church planter. I don't know anything about what that means or what that looks like." And he said, "I think that sounds great. Why don't you start, serving and helping around the church?" And so for a couple of years, that looked like me being the dude that showed up early and set up the chairs and cleaned the bathrooms and led a small group. And I have a music background, and so sometimes I would play some music. And eventually he threw me on the pulpit on a Sunday morning and had me preach my first sermon. And my relationship with that church, the church was called Doxology. And that relationship grew, and eventually they brought me on their staff team and started to send me through some different sort of educational programs to start working on some of that training. And then it was in 2014 that they commissioned us. They sent us out to plant our first church. And so that was a church that's called Hub City Church in Albany, Oregon, which is just right next door to Corvallis, just a few miles away, really just the other side of the Willamette River. We got after it in Albany. We had a lot of fun.
It was cool. We got a chance to be a part of those early days at Imprint Church with Hub City and what was going on there, which just kind of... Like, I remember that one of the first, besides just kind of some financial support we gave, what was amazing is the church that we were planted from was called North Shore Baptist Church when we planted. And North Shore gave me a truckload of chairs, which I can't remember if I stole or if I took them. But,
I don't know. Some of our
music stands were given.
So some of our music stands still say NSB on them, which is pretty funny.
Yeah. So I took these chairs and we used them.
They
and so
purple.
I begged our church board at some point that we needed some new chairs because I preached too long and these old chairs were a little uncomfortable, So. So I asked Nathan. I was like, "Dude, do you want some chairs?" And he's like, "Yes, I do." And so did you come up and get them, or what happened there? I can't remember.
We loaded them in a trailer, didn't we?
Yeah, you guys loaded them in a trailer, and we came up and snagged the trailer and drove it down.
That's right.
So those beautiful purple chairs,
purple,
like royal purple. They were.
It's royal chairs.
Yeah,
they were popular in the 80s.
Purple
chairs.
Yeah, more like the purple jelly bean.
It's like purple jelly bean,
eggplant color.
I will tell you a story about those chairs. They were a huge upgrade for us because we were just in the folding metal chairs until that point.
Yep.
And those chairs were so comfortable. We used to have our worship practices on like Thursday night or something.
Yeah.
And there was in that area of Albany a pretty decent population of homeless, houseless individuals. And we had this one lady that would usually just wander in on Thursday nights because we leave the door open. And it's a warm and dry place. And on more than one occasion, she came in and she'd sit in the back, and then she'd just progressively get more and more horizontal until she'd fall asleep. And then we realized after a while that most of the time she fell asleep, she would also wet the bed, so to speak. And so we wound up burning a lot of those chairs. the end of that story. Gosh.
But she was, that's church planning 101 right there. Exactly. You'd have no idea that might happen. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So what did you learn at kind of Corvallis that kind of helped you go into Hub City and plant there? Did you learn a lot of your lessons in Hub City just like doing the work of ministry? Like, what was that like for church planting, you know, thrown into the deep end?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, I would say you can learn a lot of tips and tricks, and you can read all the books and you can take the courses. But man, at the end of the day, nothing really prepares you for the work until you're doing it. You know, you just gotta get in there and start swinging. And so that's what it was. I learned a lot of valuable lessons in Corvallis, loved my time at Doxology. But you know, there's something about, jumping out on your own and all of a sudden being this church planter guy that everybody's looking to for leadership. And, you know, as a church planter, you are juggling so many things at once. You know, you're wearing
about 1,000 different hats.
Yeah, so many hats. You've got your pastor hat, your preacher hat, your counselor hat, your networker hat, your fundraiser hat.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You guys said the same time.
Yeah. For me, it was wearing your
general contractor hat.
Exactly. Yeah. It was the general contractor hat.
I don't have one of those, but he did.
Yeah.
So you kind of just have to do everything. And, and you know,
well, it sounds like you got a bit of an experience with that when you showed up in Corvallis. You said, "Hey, I think I'm supposed to be a church planter." And it sounds like that pastor was like, "Here, do everything."
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And even when they brought me on staff, it really was kind of a utility role. I was overseeing worship, but I was also doing some preaching, but I was also kind of the operations lead, I guess. And I think that was really helpful in the fact that it prepared me for, as a church planter, the reality that you kind of have to do a little bit of everything. So,
yeah. So you get to Albany, Oregon, you plant a church there called Hub City. What stood out to you most about kind of ministry in Albany? You're from there originally, which is probably why you wanted to plant there. But what was your heart towards church planting there in that city?
Yeah, you know, for me, a lot of it was pretty personal in that. So my high school graduating class, there were, I think, 330 students or something like that. And I was one of just a small handful, maybe a half dozen believers in our class. There were very, very few. Yeah. And so, you know, I went off to college, to Oregon State, and then left the country for 4 years, came back and was next door in Corvallis. And for me, coming home and getting a chance to church plant in my hometown was really an opportunity to say, hey, you know, God's bringing me full circle, sort of back home, where I left as soon as I could after I graduated high school, and giving me a second shot to reach my friends and peers with the gospel. And that was one of the beautiful things that I really got to enjoy in our time in Albany was getting to see a lot of former classmates, schoolmates, whatever, who are now, you know, getting older. They're in their whatever 20s, 30s. Some of them starting to get married or have kids and ask big questions of life and showing up to church in many cases for the first time ever. And wrestling with the gospel. So that was really special, for me.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
So what happened in Hub City? What were you, how long were you there for, and what brought you kind of to where you're at now?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to give you the short version of the story.
There is a longer version, that's for sure.
There is a longer version. Yeah, I'll keep it brief, but just to say that I probably have, I don't know, I probably know over 100 church planters, right, that I have personal relationship with through networks and through conversations and friendships. And when you get together, you always kind of share your war stories, as it were.
Yeah,
and I think that to a person, everyone that's heard our story, particularly of our first year at Hub City Church, pretty unanimously agrees that it's the worst church planting story they've ever heard. Oh, yeah. It was.
I agree. 100%. Yes.
Terrible. Why don't you go ahead and tell us?
We had just it was a lot of trauma, a lot of difficulty. In brief, just to give you a taste, the day that we were launching our church service, right, which you build up to like for a year, planning and working through this, and you're doing preview services and you're getting ready. Our launch service, instead of being a Sunday morning worship service, actually wound up being a surprise funeral service for one of our founding elders, who was also my very best friend. Okay. So on his 28th birthday, he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and died a couple of months later, basically the week that we were starting our church. So that was personally devastating. Institutionally, it was brutal because it gutted our leadership team right out the gate. Right. Yeah. So that was hard. And then we were homeless and we finally found a building that we renovated and spent a bunch of time on. And we got in there and then the landlord evicted us because he found a different renter that he could pay more money to or would get more money from. Yeah. So that was hard. Mm-hmm. And we moved into a high school, one of the local high schools. And we thought, hey, man, this is great. We're going to love it. We had our first Sunday there, Palm Sunday, right? So it's 1 week before our first ever Easter service, which, as you guys know, is kind of it's your Super Bowl Sunday, right? It's a big deal.
Yeah, totally.
Especially for a church plant. If people are going to come check out a new church, it's going to be on Easter.
Yeah, they're going to come on Easter.
Yeah. So Wednesday between Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, so 4 days from our first Easter, an arsonist set fire to the school building and burned it to the ground with literally everything we owned inside of it.
Oh, my God.
And when I say everything, I mean everything, like our church laptop and video projector, all of our instruments. We had just bought a brand new drum set and keyboard, like everything, full and total loss 4 days before our first Easter service, right? So the punches just kept coming, like it was brewing. There's more to it, but I'll leave the story there. All that to say, it was a hard and traumatic first year. But what was beautiful is at every single one of those turns where we thought, man, is this the end? Do we need to throw in the towel? Are we done? God used those difficulties to grow the church and to make more people in the community aware of our existence. That Easter service that we held kind of just beside the burned down building, a news crew from Portland showed up, videotaped our Easter service, and then broadcast it on the news to like 1.5 million viewers.
wow.
And so now the gospel's going out over the 5 o'clock news. And I wind up getting emails and phone calls from people all across, not just the Pacific Northwest, but the world. People caught this story. I was getting emails from people in England. I got an email from some pastor in like Nairobi or something, like it just all over saying, what do you need? How can we help?
That's amazing.
Yeah. So just that kind of stuff that felt devastating in the moment, but then God totally redeemed and used it to build the church. Right. So,
that's awesome.
Which is very reminiscent of Acts in my mind, right? It's always these tragic. Remember when Stephen gets stoned, right? And then it's this total freak out moment, and the disciples scatter, and the gospel goes with them, and churches just start popping up all over the place. Like, so it's pretty beautiful. So,
well, it's interesting. You can say that now, Nathan, but I remember at the time, like this, like to not downplay the trauma, there was some serious pain. Like, you're like, what do I come up with new instruments for Easter? We have an Easter service we want to do. Like, how are we going to do that? Or dealing with the loss of your close friend who actually showed up at Imprint one Sunday. He was up here with us one Sunday. Yep. As you guys were kind of talking about the ministry. And actually, I remember he was at my house and he didn't feel good, you know, and we're like, man, we didn't know it was cancer. Like, I watched that stuff actually take a toll on you for even that first year. You hit more in your first year of ministry than most church planters hit in 7 years of ministry.
Yeah.
And because I know a few more stories as well. So to watch you, I mean, it sounds cool and sexy now, but there was certainly a time where it was just like, how long, oh Lord, are you going to allow this to happen?
Yeah.
You know, so I commend you, brother, for all your work in staying with the course there, which is pretty, I know it's difficult.
Yeah. So. Well, thanks, man. Yeah, it was, it's fun to look back and see God's faithfulness now, but nothing about that was fun in the moment. So And you're right. Yeah, we were desperate. I was like, man, I really need instruments. And Darren's like, here's 200 purple chairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can really play the chairs. But yeah.
You could beat on him if you want to.
Harmonica. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, totally. Right. All right, so what happened next in Hub City's history?
Yeah, we kept on keeping on for about another year. We wound up staying at that high school. They had another building that didn't burn down. It was their gymnasium. And then after about a year, we found a more permanent location for us right in the heart of downtown Albany, which was a beautiful location. Darren, you came and preached there at least once, if not,
totally.
Not more than that.
I even helped you come work in that building a little bit. Not that I was much help, but just, showed up. It was cool.
Yeah, sure. And that was really neat. And I think once we found that permanent location, once we were no longer the mobile church, in and out and whatever, we had kind of a planted, rooted presence in the city. That's when the church really started growing.
Yeah.
And so we got to being about 4 years in. And in another kind of tragic experience, another very dear friend of mine very unexpectedly passed away.
Yeah.
And that hit me like a ton of bricks. Darren, you went to Multnomah with him, and so you knew Daniel.
Yep.
It was a really kind of freak accident. He got sick and passed away in his sleep. And I, at that point, I was with his wife, much like I was with my friend Sam's wife, at the funeral home, and I preached his funeral and walked through the mourning and grieving of all of that. And I got through that experience, and I think that something in me broke a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was just hitting the wall and like, man, if this is what ministry is, if what it means is that all of your best friends die and everything goes wrong and you're constantly working 70 hours a week and you're just totally exhausted.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've got it in me. I don't know that I can keep doing it. And so, our elder team at the time was very gracious. They said, hey, we want you to take I think they gave me maybe 6 weeks or 7 weeks off. We kind of called it a sabbatical, but it was more just like catch your breath and see what the Lord is calling you to do. And for me, the first question was, God, are you calling me to be done with ministry?
Yeah.
And then the second question was, and if not, am I supposed to be still here at Hub City? The church had grown substantially at
That's
this
right.
point.
Yep.
We were.
Yeah, you were killing it, brother. From an outside perspective, it was really cool to watch. I mean, you had this beautiful building right down by the Willamette River in downtown Albany. And it's like you had traffic passing by your place on a regular basis. And like it seemed like people would just wander in. And you have a heart for the down and out people of kind of kind of fit the Albany crew down there, which was super cool to see,
Yeah. It was at times a rowdy bunch, but it was always a lot of fun. And kind of right in that downtown, East downtown Albany is kind of the heart of the brokenness in that city in terms of the tangible brokenness, crime, poverty, and whatnot. So we were right in the midst of it and loved that. It was hard, it wasn't easy, but something about it was really beautiful and redemptive.
Yeah.
And so, when we started the church, it was like, it's your classic, there were 10 people in my living room kind of deal. And as we were cusping that 4 year mark, we were pushing, I think 300 something people running two services and pretty much packing them out. And
not a lot of money because you were, a lot of churches when they get to the 300 level are, you would say kind of self-sustaining, if you will. There's like these, metrics that we have as church planners to say when can you be self-sustaining, but that doesn't count into the fact that Albany was not a rich area and most of the people showing up weren't actually giving a ton of money to your church. So, you were running on a skeleton staff, right? When you were running 300 people.
Yeah, very much so, which I think contributed to some of my exhaustion too, we just didn't have the staff to support the size of the ministry. At the time, We did some numbers crunching and some research and realized that we were operating on a budget that was 1/5 the national average for a church of our size.
Yeah.
Right. Hmm. So 20% of the budget of what it could have been, I guess, if it were normal or average. So that was really tough. I was the only full-time person. I had a couple of part-time people around me. And in that last year, we'd actually lost our worship leader. And so I was doing double duty. I was leading worship and doing the lion's share of the preaching in back-to-back services. And it was...
Well, that's exhausting.
That was exhausting. Yeah.
So what happened during your 7-week break or 6-week break?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I think it was our first week off or something. We actually came up to Seattle.
You sure did.
And we went out to that, is it called Krista Camp?
It's Christian camp over on the other side of the peninsula.
Yeah, on the peninsula. But we came up. I remember my wife and I got to spend an evening with your elder team at Imprint. You guys listened to our story and our exhaustion, and you guys prayed with us. It was super encouraging. Mm. Yeah, and then we played, we took it easy, we did a lot of praying. We went to Hawaii for a week in there, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, it had been 4 years since we'd been on a vacation, so it was needed.
Ultimately, you'd also, as a family, grew your family, you know, so you just like, you know, you and Carrie, you suddenly had some kids with you as well. You have 25 kids now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had 25 children.
That was most of your church then.
No, these are my nieces and nephews. Yeah. These are people who have four kids.
That's the fastest way to grow a church as a church planner, you know,
It's very true. Yeah. We took the commandment to be fruitful and multiply very literally
very seriously.
At
there are benefits to believing the Bible, you know? Anyway.
It's true. One of my favorite stories from our Hub City launch was that, the Sunday after Sam's funeral, which then became our real launch, right? Because our original launch was his funeral service. My wife is she's a home birth midwife, and she's the best missionary that I've ever known. Mm-hmm. Our very first Sunday, her sister was on our staff team. Her sister was our children's director. And she pulled my wife desperately into the nursery last minute because there were way more kids, little kids, babies that showed up than we had thought would. And so my wife was back there holding babies and changing diapers and doing all of that that first Sunday. And what we figured out later was that there were 15 kids in the nursery that Sunday. My wife, as a midwife, had delivered 13 of those 15 kids. And the majority of them were not church attending families, which is really amazing.
That's cool.
It was new families, new to church, asking big questions because they started having kids and they don't know what to do with their life. Mm. And so that was pretty special. But yeah, we have four kids of our own. We had them in very rapid succession. So our oldest was 4 years old when our fourth was born.
Okay.
So,
all right.
We did that quick, parenting young kids, planting churches. Yep. My wife was in school full time, through all of that. But God held us together.
Yeah.
So I got to the end of that sabbatical and felt like God had not released me from the work of being a pastor and church planter, but he had released us from the particular context of Hub City Church in Albany. And so we took about 3 months, as I recall, and basically transitioned leadership. I had another pastor with me when I planted. His name's Randall Goodman, and he was kind of the associate pastor. He was part-time. He slotted up into the new lead role. He's still there at Hub City Church.
Great.
They're still growing and doing great. It seemed like a really healthy transition for the most part. And he's one of my best friends. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, we were over in Central Oregon for a couple of days together, which we try to do regularly. So,
that's awesome.
So Hub City Church is living on. They're as healthy as they've ever been, I think. And the kingdom is still moving forward, which does my heart a lot of good.
Yeah, totally. Well, I know when you build something, there can be that temptation of like, well, am I the one holding this together? Or there's that temptation to think that way. But it's probably really good for your soul to see it flourishing, even though you're not there anymore.
Yeah.
Even though you were a very
Absolutely.
Dynamic part of making it grow. What did that feeling of release? How did you guys discern that? Because I feel like a lot of people walk through those seasons where they're tired and they're wondering like, okay, is God calling me on to something else? Was there like a particular moment that crystallized that for you guys, or like a particular word in the Bible, anything like that? Or
You know what I don't know that I could have articulated it this succinctly at the time, but One of the things that I tend to be not a super emotional person. Hmm. Like, I'm not full robot like Darren, but like,
That's fair.
Darren's not a robot. Darebot.
Thank you.
But you know, what's funny is, throughout my life, there have been these kind of pivotal moments where, God had to kind of shake me out of what had become kind of my normal routine. This is what I'm doing. Hmm. And one of the ways that he's done that in me is to actually create this almost kind of inescapable sense of I guess anxiety would maybe be the best way to put it, but kind of this healthy unrest in me that something's got to give, something's got to change. Like there's something going on here. And so I remember that very, very vividly when I was at Oregon State and God called me into missions work. I remember it very vividly when I was over in Germany and God was calling me to the work of church planting. And we moved back to the States. And then I can remember it very clearly when I was at Doxology. Like, that was the trigger point. You got to go and plant Hub City now. And then about 4 years into Hub City, feeling that same sense again of like God stirring something new in me. You know, I resonate with some of those psalms where David is expressing his own anxiety and worry and kind of turmoil. And those seems to be moments where God was kind of breaking through to him and doing something new. I think for me, that was a big part of it. The other big part, if I'm honest, is listening. I have learned to listen to my wife. Mm. She is an incredibly intuitive and incredibly discerning individual. I tend not to be that. And she's just kind of one of those people that, you know, she has the Lord's ear, the Lord has her ear. And, as we've talked and prayed and processed, she's tended to have a lot of clarity around some of those decisions. And, I tend to be the one like pumping the brakes and saying, well, hold on, let's see whatever. And she tends to be up for the adventure. So,
So that's cool, man. I think I remember at the at that transition point, I literally tried to hire you here at Imprint Church and wanted you to come work for us. But the Lord had some other plans. That's a true story. I could tell you that for another time. But what did he have? Kind of fast forward us through the next couple of years of your life there.
Yeah. So the next 2 years, we wound up moving to Bend in Central Oregon, which is a pretty cool, pretty interesting little city in the high desert.
And people talk about it like it's a land flowing with milk and honey and beer.
It's pretty sweet if you don't live there, I've heard. So yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty amazing place. It's where everybody wants to vacation. Yeah. You know, this is getting ahead of myself, but I remember when I went to Lowe's in Bend to buy a bunch of like moving boxes and whatever, cause we were moving to Portland. And I remember the lady that was, you know, the cashier that was ringing me up. She was like, oh no, are you moving? This looks terrible. This doesn't look fun at all.
No one should
like,
leave.
Yeah. Well, she's like, where are you going? And I was like, oh, we're moving to Portland. She was like, you know, you're going the wrong direction. Right? She's like, everybody moves from Portland to Bend. What are you doing? So I took a position at a church in Bend called Antioch Church. And they brought me on to be the pastor of worship and formation was my title, but mostly I was leading the worship ministry, which is a big job. But for me, after being the church planter wearing all of the hats, to going and being the worship pastor wearing the worship hat, felt a little bit like a vacation. If I'm honest,
you had one lane, and that was it.
Yeah, you got one lane. Stay in your lane. Do your thing. And so in many ways, the 2 years that we spent in Bend, it was almost exactly 2 years. In fact, were 2 years of time for us to catch our breath, to get our feet back under us,
kind of rebuild.
To rebuild, to relax, to live at a slower pace, to get a lot of quality time together as a family in a place that's really fun to live, you know, do a lot of hiking and that sort of stuff that Central Oregon is famous for. And so I'd say the first year was mostly just me catching my breath and chilling out and like recovering.
Yeah.
And then the second year there was really beginning to actively seek the Lord again and say, God, what do you have for us?
Yep.
God hadn't released me from that calling to be a kind of a church planter, kind of that apostolic side of ministry. Yeah. I just needed to catch my breath. And so as we were praying for God, what do you have next? Are you going to keep us in Bend for the next 10 or 15 years, or is there something else? The long story short is that's how we wound up moving up here to Portland.
Yeah. And that story is because you felt kind of in your calling, in your heart a little bit, that you were called to preach, you were called to lead, you were called to do some of those things, but you kind of needed a respite in a sense. Is that kind of what the Bend experience was?
Yeah. I think that's a great way to say it. I'm very grateful for my time there, my time at Antioch Church. I think were it not for the time that I got to spend there, I wouldn't be in ministry anymore today.
Yeah. Well, all church planters have, I think, what you can call like a holy discontentment. It can be a sinful discontentment, but there's a holy discontentment, I think, that comes up with church planters of like, man, I'm not sure I would do things that way. And it's not always wrong. Sometimes it can be, right? It can be.
Chairs need to be purple.
It can be prideful, but what's cool is I think I see that in everyone. I mean, that's just part of it. I mean, I can think of my brother Tom, who's sitting across from the table right here. Like most of his, we have very similar core values in terms of the way we view ministry. But there's also a part of him that's like, I'm called to teach and lead. And there's a piece of leadership that I want to express that's different than the goon that sits across the table from me right now. And that's okay, you know?
That's not how I said it, but I hear what you're
saying. Yeah, totally. So yeah, Red Sea, man, it's an amazing story. So if you don't know Imprint Church, maybe you can kind of catch him up a little bit, Nathan. But what's cool is that, I mean, we talked, I don't know, when this was a couple years ago now, where we chatted about the idea of kind of strategically partnering together with Antioch Church in Bend and kind of help and support you guys for a couple years to get you guys going. Because Red Sea is not a church plant. It's different. What is it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that what you would consider the ministry that we're doing right now is either a church, somewhere between a church replant, or really we've adopted the language of a revitalization. Nice. And so Red Sea Church is actually, well, this summer we're celebrating 20 years. So Red Sea's been around for 20 years. And probably 12 to 13 years ago, it had kind of hit a peak, a heyday in ministry. And then through some leadership transitions and a whole bunch of other stuff, the church has just been kind of on a slow, steady decline for a while.
Yeah.
And so when they reached out to me, which is a bit over 2 years ago, and we started some of the conversations with Imprint and whatnot, they were kind of at the point where they were nearly on life support as a church saying, hey, we need a new kind of infusion of fresh DNA. We need some new leadership. The guy that had been leading the church for the last 10 years, who's one of my closest and best friends, he was pretty exhausted and saying like, I'm not sure kind of where to go with this next. And so, yeah, we talked about basically coming in as missionaries and church planters to kind of try to help revitalize this thing, turn it around and start engaging the culture again, which we were really excited about. And for us, the context piece was an absolute slam dunk in that I think as fun and wonderful as it was to live in Bend, for us, it was a kind of a contextual misfire in that Bend, it's going to sound super weird to say this, the hardest thing for my wife and I about living in Bend is how awesome Bend is.
Yeah, no, I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very clean. It's very, very white. It's very, very affluent and successful.
Yeah, no one needs anything.
It's a vacation town. There's no needs there. It's just people that live in Bend lovingly refer to Bend as the bubble where there's like almost no crime and no poverty. It's very safe. You don't ever have to lock your doors. It's kind of that, a little bit like that. St. John's, the St. John's neighborhood, which is at the kind of the tip of the North Portland Peninsula, which is where Red Sea is at, could be no more different in terms of context. St. John's is it's hard, man. It's a pretty brutal context. So we've had, for example, something like 120 shootings in the neighborhood in the last year within sort of a one mile radius of the church and our house. We live really close to the church building here, including one Saturday night when a drive-by shooting literally on the sidewalk in front of our church, where the police picked up something like, I think it was like 37 bullet casings, right? So the crime, the violence, gang activity, drug activity, the poverty, everything here is really, really tough. Pretty widely considered one of the brutalest, if not the most brutal neighborhood in the greater Portland area, for sure.
So. And you feel called to that. You feel like, man, we are in this. This is what we should be doing. Is that right?
100%. In the same way that some of that brokenness of Albany drew us to plant the church there, and we were drawn to that kind of the east downtown, kind of homeless, rougher part of the city where nobody wanted to plant churches. We very much feel the same here in North Portland. Like, this is kind of the heart of darkness in the city. This feels to me like where Jesus probably would have gone. You know, he had a reputation for hanging out with the down and outs and the despised and the lowly. Man, that's a lot of what this neighborhood is. And so we moved in and instantly said, man, how can we get as connected to this context as possible, right? We put our kids in the public schools, which I'll tell you right now, nobody does here if they have any other option. So the public schools are bad. Like, I'll just shoot straight. They're real rough. And we've said, hey, you know what? Our kids are part of this calling to be missionaries too. That means we're going to be really involved in these schools as parents. So I'm actually wearing my Riders
football. I see it.
Shirt. Yeah. So I coached the middle school football team this last season,
which
was awesome.
Yeah.
It was an amazing way to get in touch with a lot of families and a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and just learning their stories, man. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Really heartbreaking, brutal stuff. But it also meant, you know, the greatest number of visitors, first time visitors that we had coming to Red Sea over this last year were actually my friends' kids. My kids'
friends.
And so what would happen is, you know, my kids are making these friends at school or on the football team. Our football games were always Saturday mornings. And these boys would be like, hey, can we have a sleepover, whatever? And we'd be like, yeah, that's fine. You can come and, you know, hang out at our house. But if you stay over, you have to come to church with us tomorrow morning. And they'd be like, okay, fine. That sounds all right. And so we had probably dozens of our kids, classmates and friends that wound up joining us on Sundays for worship this last year, which was pretty cool.
And in a time when it seems like most people are kind of fleeing the crazy cities and things like that, and kind of like
everyone's retreating to those kind of country club cities like Bend and whatnot instead of going to the hard places.
Yeah, it feels like you did the opposite. You ran into the city a little bit more, and you decided like this is what we're gonna do. I mean, that's got to be hard. Is that hard in your family? Out of curiosity.
Yeah, what was that transition like for them?
Yeah. Yes. It felt like, I think for my kids especially, it felt a little bit like whiplash. Like, we went from Albany, which has the public schools in Albany, which were medium okay, medium rough, to Bend, which are like basically the best public schools in the state, to St. John's, which is the worst of the state, right?
Yeah,
like, and so it kind of went from hard life to like everything's awesome to just back in the trenches. And that was hard. You know, moving to a new city, starting over in a rough school where you literally don't know a single person, that's hard.
Yeah.
But, man, credit to my kids. They're all loving and outgoing enough to be quick to make friends and have done really well.
Yeah.
They've also seen a lot of hard things and learned a lot of really hard lessons. We've had to teach them lessons that we never imagined.
Yeah.
That we would have to as parents, like sort of discipling them into surviving public school.
And
there's a lot of gray stuff there that's just hard. But man, they've done really, really well. And I'm really proud of them for that.
That's awesome. What's ministry like in St. John? So talk about the neighborhood that you're in and like we cared a little like crime and things like that. You'd mentioned before, like Portland voted to defund the police, right? So, I mean, you guys are in this place where there's like, what happened with that? And what's ministry like for this neighborhood for churches there?
Frankly, the churches in the neighborhood are dropping like flies.
Oh, man.
And some of that is COVID, and some of that is just how brutal the context is. But we were doing some counting just the other day, Josh, our other pastor and I, and figured out that just right here in the sort of immediate neighborhood, there are now 7 churches in the last year that permanently closed their doors.
Wow,
like,
man.
Quit, board up, walk away. They're done. And so we're one of very few remaining kind of churches, gospel preaching churches, that are left. And in large part, that is partly due to the incredible support from our ministry partners, like you guys at Imprint and Antioch. Like, you guys have helped keep this thing going for the last 2 years. Without that, we would likely be in the same boat as some of these others. So we're incredibly thankful for you guys actually practicing what you preach. I know you guys talk a lot about generosity at Imprint. You guys also live it, and it's making a difference in Portland. So thank you for that.
Appreciate that.
But yeah, man, it's... So my 2 older kids are in middle school. There are 3 lockdowns this year at their middle school that were due to gun threats on campus. Mm-hmm. Only one of those 3 lockdowns did the police even show up at.
Oh, man.
And one of the reasons why there's been 100 plus shootings in the neighborhood, and one of the reasons why there's drugs are crazy and graffiti and all sorts of craziness is that there is almost no police presence in our neighborhood. So when the defunding took place, they shut down the North Portland police precinct, which means the nearest police station is about 25 minutes away on the other side, northeast Portland, the other side of the interstate.
You're kidding.
And so best case scenario, police are 25, 30 minutes out if they get called, if you can even get through to them, which is very hit or miss. And so it's very rare, very few and far between that you would ever see a police car rolling through downtown St. John's. And and that has meant kind of free rein for people to do whatever they're going to do, which is tough. So I just I walked up the back stairs up here into my office just today. And somebody was camping out on my office step and like graffitied the entire side door to our building. So there's some really colorful language out there right now, which is pretty fun. So, but that's just, we're used to that. We're used to there being people like Josh and I kind of Rochambeau for the responsibility of walking around the church building once a week with big thick gloves because we have to pick up the needles that are left behind. Yeah, and feces, and it's just rough, man. Mm. It's we are in it.
Yeah. So how's the church doing, man? Like how are you guys you know, what's it like? What's it like to pastor in a neighborhood like that, and how are you feeling about the church revitalization efforts?
Yeah. You know, I feel like just within the last couple of months, I feel like we're kind of starting to see some light on the horizon. You know, I moved here like 2 months into COVID being a thing, COVID starting, and that has cast a huge shadow over our first 2 years.
Totally.
So
yeah.
I remember church planting in Albany, and if you want to talk church planting strategy, you typically devise these like funding strategies that are going to supplement you in decreasing amounts over several years. And if you want to use the analogy of Well, you guys are close to Boeing, right? So you've got a 747 and you know, hey, I need 2.5 miles of runway or whatever to get this thing up to speed to get it off the ground. We kind of did that fundraising work with the revitalization here. And then it felt like COVID just destroyed our runway.
Yeah.
So we get to the end of 2 years and we're like, we're going not much faster than we were when we started, but we're almost out of runway. Yeah. Like, how are we going to get this thing in the air? So that's been really frustrating to me because Portland has been every bit as locked down and kind of people shut in as I'm sure Seattle has been, where you just you guys probably know people that were part of Imprint that you haven't seen in 2 years because they haven't left their house, right? Like, we've had a lot of that at Red Sea, and there's just been a lot of that in the neighborhood. Like, yeah. People literally afraid to go to church because they don't want to get sick, which I understand and I have sympathy for sure. It's just been a really frustrating season to try to gain speed, to try to gain momentum.
To try to join a community when community is kind of shut down. That's ridiculous. Because I remember us talking about helping you guys at the 2020 family meeting, which I think was like 3 weeks before COVID shutdowns came.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yeah, this is going to be amazing. And then, and then nothing was amazing at all that year. So
amazingly bad.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
So I guess the last 2 years for us have been, you know, we're swinging away. We're trying to faithfully, you know, keep doing the work. We're celebrating the wins and the fruit when we see it. You know, the last 2 years at Easter, we've baptized a handful of people, which has been amazing. Prior to 2020, it had been 4 years since anybody had come to saving faith in Jesus and been baptized at Red Sea Church, right? So 4 years with nothing. And now 2 years with a little bit, which we're clinging to and saying, yes, Lord, yes, more, right? Bring it on. So I would say that we're optimistically hopeful for the future, but have been kind of disappointed or frustrated with what I think is in large part due to the pandemic, just the struggle that the last couple of years have been in terms of trying to generate traction.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
It's kind of like a building burning down. Or something, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
yeah. I think of your church planning experiences, Nathan, have certainly have been pretty extreme from all the things you faced. And I mean, I just want to thank you for your faithfulness, buddy. You have you have been an inspiration to me to watch you, and it's been pretty fun to see how the Lord's been using you and Carrie as well. Carrie's pretty studly. You're right. She's a great missionary, and she's a great human being. So I'm really grateful for her as well. So really, really awesome to see what you're doing there. And I'm grateful that Imprint Church gets to be a small part in that. I mean, in some ways, the finances that we get to pitch your way seem like just part of it. I like this stuff. I like that our church right now is going to hear more about what you're doing.
Can I say something to
you?
Yeah,
please do.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, I was just going to ask how we can pray for him too. But
no,
I was going to ask.
Man, you guys beat me to the prayer question.
What's super encouraging to me, Nathan, is that you and Carrie and your kids feel called to a hard place. And it's just, we live in a context and I succumb to it. I can feel it. Like we all gravitate toward comfort. And there might be people listening who are going, oh, that's so irresponsible. Why would you put your kids in that school? And I'm like, don't we say that we value the incarnation, that Jesus left the glories and the comforts of heaven to come to our messy place and expose himself to danger and hardship and sorrow and pain? And we say that we follow Jesus who did this, and we don't want to do the same thing. So and thank you for being a model for us in a Jesus kind of way, where you left the comforts of Bend and comforts of places,
it's like,
you know, and go to a place
Bend
where you're like,
something to be grasped.
Right, where you're Rochambeauing with, you know, with your co-pastor on who gets to go clean up the property. You know what I mean? So there's just a real raw and earnest, like Jesus-like mentality. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, man.
And here's what I'll do.
I appreciate the encouragement.
Yeah, man. Here's what I think we'll do to kind of close our time with these Lampstand podcast series that we're doing is I think I'll ask our people, if you're listening to this podcast right now, I'm going to ask each of our pastors here to share a prayer request. And I want you, as soon as we sign off, to pray for that prayer request. And that way we get, are we up to like 6 million people listening every week now?
600,000.
600,000. Yeah. Sorry, I got that wrong.
I can't remember if it was six or 600,000.
It might be six. It might be me listening to this later in my car while I'm driving. But
I think the Darren's top podcast on Spotify was our podcast last year.
Yeah, that's a little embarrassing, though. It seems a little like, I don't know, self-serving. I was listening to our own podcast. In my defense, I wasn't on all the podcasts. Yeah, okay. So. But yeah, so Nathan, maybe just to close our time here, tell us how we can pray for you. Maybe one or two things that we can pray for you, and then know as soon as this, as soon as we run the end cool radio credits, sorry, the music, people will pray for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I appreciate that, and certainly appreciate the prayers of all 60 million of your listeners.
That's right. That's right.
You know, one very real prayer request is that we're sitting kind of right on the verge of what's going to be a really big transition for us as a church. And so Josh, who I've mentioned a couple times, who's been kind of the lead pastor until I got here 2 years ago, is at the end of June transitioning out from Red Sea and actually moving home to Alabama. He and his wife are both from the Mobile area. Their family's back there, and they have some aging parents and relatives that they feel really called to be close to and serve in this next season of life. And so I guess the prayer is twofold. Part of the prayer is just praying for peace and unity for the church throughout that transition, right? Because you guys know when church leadership transitions happen, there can be difficulty, there can be fallout, there can be disunity. And so we've been praying for a unified church as we move through that. And so part of it is just for the church's health and sustainability as we're losing some families. But the other side of the prayer request, if I can be selfish and just ask for a personal prayer request, I remember very, very well, losing staff in Albany and a couple of years of kind of me being Johnny on the spot for everything. And it was exhausting.
Yeah.
And it kind of led to some burnout for me personally. And so I'm praying that God would, provide a way for us to be able to bring on some more part-time help and staff, and then just praying for my own personal sustainability, because I know this next season is going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of work, and there's not a lot of laborers at this point. And so I'm praying that God's going to provide the people and the resources that we need to carry through this next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Family, you're listening to this. Yeah. As soon as the music gets done, would you pray those things for Nathan and for Red Sea Church? Man, if anyone wants to reach out to you, Nathan, how do they catch you? If anyone's listening and wants to say hi or send you an encouraging note or something like that, how would they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I am super old school, and so I don't do a whole lot on social media, but I would love, you know, if somebody wants to pop off an email or something, I'm in Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, at redseachurch.org. And I would love, I'd love to hear from you guys, love to know that folks are praying for us. That would mean a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah. Send an encouraging note to Nathan if you want to.
Yeah, please
folks.
Do. But please do.
Dude, thank you, brother, for your partnership.
Thanks, Nathan.
This is a cool thing. And I think we're going to try. We have been talking about getting a rotation of some sort. Tom going down to Red Sea and preaching. I did once already, having Nathan come up here doing something.
Yeah, I think
like
he was
that.
Supposed to at the beginning of the year, but then there was the little random COVID spike thing.
Yeah, so we had some weirdness that happened there. I can't remember. Actually, there was a weather thing. You were supposed to come
up
here.
It was snowing.
Storm.
There was a huge snowstorm. Yeah. We canceled church that day, so it was good you didn't come. So, yes, although you could have hung out with us. But
yeah, totally. Well, Nathan, seriously, thanks so much for being here. And thanks for being where you are and for being a gospel presence in Portland. We'll be praying that the Lord does great things. So if you have something to you want to know about what's going on at Red Sea, reach out to Nathan. Or if you just even have some encouragement, send him an email. But we will be back next week with somebody else. So say bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.